Calling to order the committee, the whole meeting for October 7th, 2014. Could we do the roll call, please?
Mr. Ebert is not here. Mrs. Fisher?
Here.
Mrs. Gottlieb is not here. Mr. Latham?
Here.
Mr. Martieri?
Here.
Mr. Meyer?
Here.
And Mr. Weiss is not yet here.
Okay. Hello, visitors. Any public comments? Not at this time. Excellent. No, I didn't mean excellent. I mean, you know, what I meant was...
Just working out the kinks.
Yes. I have to choose my words as carefully as ever, right? Okay.
What I meant.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Okay. So can I get a motion to approve the agenda? Is there a second?
Second.
All right.
I didn't hear the first motion, so I'll just give one to each. Mrs. Fisher?
Yes.
Mr. Latham?
Yeah.
Mr. Martieri?
Yes.
Mr. Meyer?
Yes. Okay, we first thing we have on the agenda tonight is board action on some personnel matters. Is that
yes,
right,
we
Ed?
Do.
You
want to
take that?
Brief personnel report.
Okay.
We have a recommendation for approval of two consultant contracts tonight. The first is for an individual who will be assisting the music program over at Roosevelt. This was in the past, these folks were actually funded through Pima, and there was some realignment in terms of how individuals who assist the full-time music teachers provide instruction for kids outside the regular classroom setting. So now it's structured under a consultant contract, and we're excited, obviously, to make this recommendation. The second is to transition our interim communication coordinator to the full-time role of communications coordinator. Been very pleased with the work of Mrs. Donson, and
excellent.
Excited to make those recommendations tonight.
So moved.
Okay, so we're looking, yeah.
Second.
Motion, thank you.
Mr. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yes.
Mr. Latham?
Yeah.
Mrs. Fisher?
Yes.
Okay, so tonight's headline presentation, I guess, is from the Education Committee, and Ann will be joining us a little bit later, I understand. I think we can go ahead and kick things off, Ed.
Sounds great. We're really excited, actually, tonight, because the two items we have to present this evening are things that are really kind of strike at the mission of what D90 is all about, instruction and long-term vision, and I can't imagine better things to be discussing. So tonight, I'm particularly proud and pleased to be welcoming a couple of our esteemed faculty members. Of course, in the audience, we have Kevin Martin, our Director of Technology, and also assisting in behind the scenes is Martha Ryan Toy, our Director of Student Services. But the main show tonight, so to speak, will be hosted by Lindsay Johnson and AJ Peters, who both have really critical roles here with the district now in terms of moving our technology initiatives forward. The board, I know, has had the opportunity in the past to hear from both of them before, so it's kind of nice to have them back. The topics this evening really all fall under the umbrella of instructional technology, though. We're going to be talking a little bit, I know, about STEM programming. We'll be talking about the way in which the iPad deployment continues here at Roosevelt to be robust, and the supports that we're providing for teachers, and making sure that they're able to deploy that technology successfully. So lots of information. I know when to stop talking, and I think it's now. So welcome, AJ, Lindsay. We're glad to have you here.
Welcome. Thank you. I brought my water here because sometimes I get really nervous, even though you're a small group and you're smiling.
You've known us a long time now.
Lindsay,
no reason to be nervous.
This is your third year.
I know.
As I recall.
It's my fourth year, and I give presentations every Tuesday, too. So this isn't new, but I want to impress you guys. Okay. So
you have already.
Okay.
Good start.
I put a makeup for you. The topic today is instructional technology, so and that's the piece that I'm going to speak to, and breaking that up with classroom implementation, how it's been going with students and teachers so far, and then what our plans are for professional development. And then AJ is going to speak to the piece on STEM programming in the K-4. So, and I think you have your packet too, if you want to follow along. 2013-14 review, the last MSIU was March, and it's actually the dark colored one if you do want to follow along. A lot of it is very similar, but I just put in some pictures and stuff. It's the same content. The last time I saw you was a presentation where we talked about the successes and the works in progress after 3 years. And last year was the rollout to sixth grade. And at that point, you guys decided that we recommended that it would be a good spot for fifth grade to also have iPads to speak to that cohesion for the whole school. And you guys also agreed. And we decided that we would have this kind of full-scale approach so that the whole school is one-to-one with the same device. So let's speak to what it looks like for fifth grade so far. I would definitely call the deployment a success. The fifth grade teachers spent a lot of time at the end of last year and the beginning of this year thinking about making it appropriate for the age of the students that were coming into fifth grade, both their experience with devices already, but that they were coming to a new environment with bigger kids, and they had mixed emotions coming to school. Some of them were, they acknowledged that some students might be excited about going to middle school and some kids might be nervous, and that there were going to be new routines and a bigger building. So the fifth grade, I know, like I said, I've been presenting all day, so I'm at 10%, and we'll see how far it goes. So the fifth grade teachers really decided to do the deployment differently than in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. In sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, because the students have experience with iPads, and the teachers felt more comfortable because they had experience when they got their iPads on day one, the students went from room to room where the teacher pressed like play on an instructional video that said, Notability. This is how you're going to use this, and this is how you're going to set it up. Up, 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 up. And then after 40 minutes, the students went to another classroom, and they learned about a whole other app. And that went on throughout the day, so that the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students, by the end of the day, had like 8 new things in their repertoire. But 5th grade teachers thought that they wanted to go slowly with that process. And instead of overwhelming the students right away with everything, that they were just going to go and introduce things week by week. So introduce things within the context of how they were going to use it. And so the very first day was the care and and overall guidelines of how to use their tool. And there was a long conversation, which pretty much went over the lending agreement and the guidelines, just supporting kind of the conversations we were hoping that they were already having at home with their parents. And then once that happened, we all went to the LLC, and we talked very slowly about navigating the device. Also in the first week, I believe, was using their reminders, and those are the apps that you see at the bottom. So the fifth grade teachers and I thought about what are the things that they definitely need to know at the beginning of the school year, and then let's slowly introduce them to the other pieces. And so the second bullet point talks about a solid foundation for school routines, and the fifth grade teachers have been doing an amazing job of really owning kind of what do they think is important for a fifth grade student to know right now, and spelling out step by step. How can we explain this in a way that a student at this age will understand? And so being very clear about, in the last 5 minutes of a class, I want you to flip your iPad over to screen side up. Everybody open up reminders. Let me walk around the room and make sure reminders is open. Everybody look at the screen and see the assignment that you have to write down. Type it in your reminders. Let me all walk through and make sure that everybody's there. So they're really making sure that the students have a solid foundation for setting themselves up for success and being organized students when they go through the other grades. Another thing that the teachers have been working on now is really digital workflows. Excuse me. And when I say that, I'm speaking to the students knowing where they find their assignments and what's expected of them, how they retrieve information, how they work on that information, how they turn it back into the teacher. And that takes a lot of work on the teacher's part, because they have to think about the assignments, and they have to think about the steps that they want students to do. So there's a lot of, I don't know if you remember 3 years ago when the eighth grade teachers, you know, they had their trainings in advance, but it wasn't until they had a couple of weeks with devices in the students' hands that they thought, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to need some time to digitize some of my curriculum. And they were given release time from the admin, and they spent a day with me thinking about, you know, what they want that workflow to look like. So it's not theoretical. It's very procedural, and you have to think about how you want to have things organized. Is it by unit? Is it by period of the day? Is it by, you know, this or that? So that's a lot of work that the teachers have had to do. And a lot of that is using Edmodo. That's what the second app with the glasses is. And they specifically are choosing Edmodo because they want to support successes in sixth grade. And that was something that the sixth grade teachers found that they really appreciated, and the students and the parents appreciated too, Edmodo as a tool for kind of sharing with students what their expectations were, just kind of having that workflow. They get their materials, they work on their assignments, they turn it back in. It's also a way to poll, and they can have quizzes. There's a parent portal site within there, so it's a tool that the sixth grade teachers really appreciated. And so fifth grade, when we had our carts last year, they exposed the students to it, they got some practice. The sixth grade teacher said, thank you so much, it made this year easier. And now the fifth grade teachers are finding that it's working really well for them too. And then another success in fifth grade is the Apple TVs. They're fantastic. This is an Apple TV, if anybody doesn't know that already. And it's a great way to share student thinking. So before, back in the old days, the student would have to walk to the front of the room and, you know, read something out loud or hold a piece of paper really small that people in the back of the room can't see. And now the students can simply, you know, flick up and get to that control panel, and they can put their math work on the board, and they can walk through, you know, why they got that answer, or, oh, I didn't get that answer. Well, show us what you were thinking. And then they explain, and then they can talk as a class and decide, you know, where that person went wrong. But so Apple TV, our digital workflows, setting that foundation, it's been really successful so far.
Well, if I could share a family story. So my daughter's in sixth grade, so new to the initiative. And I have been just so wonderfully surprised at how easy the transition has been for her, and I assume her classmates. And it seemed like within hours, she was comfortable with Edmodo, been showing me things at home. I get home the other day, she's sitting in my chair, sending her iPad to our home Apple TV, and she's doing her math homework on a 50-inch flat screen. And I'm thinking, this kid's got it figured out. But their comfort level is just really amazing. That I'm seeing, so I'm really happy.
Well, that's
with that.
Great. It was purposeful because 3 years ago, when Kevin was talking about, you know, next year it might go to fifth and sixth grade, it was actually a teacher suggestion to say, hey, do we have enough money to get a cart? You know, if we got a cart of devices that then we could practice with students with, that will make us more comfortable, that will make the kids more comfortable. And so that's what the fifth grade teachers have been doing for the past 2 years. They have had a cart of 30, they passed it out, and they did a lesson, a unit, and it made the teachers and the students, I think, more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think our seventh and eighth graders are the first generation to actually have had the iPad for 2 years. Am I right? I assume it's been seamless, but has it been a much easier transition the second year? Are you showing more improvement, more integration?
They had before. I think the teachers would tell you that they love it because they're not introducing concepts.
Right.
They're building on concepts. They're expanding things. That's certainly the feedback we've gotten every year from the eighth grade teachers. We're not introducing these apps. They're coming to us knowing it. We're able to focus on our content.
Right.
Yeah, deployment in eighth grade this year was you just heard me say, you know, they pressed an instructional video, and then they might practice something in class. It took 5 minutes of class time on that first day, and that was just, here's your refresher. You had this device last year, and the teachers loved it. They said, this was so easy. So they don't feel like they're reinventing the wheel.
Would that suggest maybe that we start introducing them a little bit in the fourth grade so that when they come into the fifth grade, they're not? Because now every fifth grade class, the teachers are going to have to.
Right. Can I jump? I'll just jump in on that.
No, you
one
can't.
Because you're.
Do you know AJ? Because he will.
I have no doubt.
Thank you. You're going to see more and more of that anyway because we're talking about more iPads. I mean, the start of it at that eighth grade level was kind of the start of the rollout in the elementary grades as well. Not as a classroom set or anything along those lines, but just having the devices within the schools.
Yeah.
So more and more of those skills are going to be built in by the time those students hit fifth grade coming up. The more we're increasing our number each year in terms of the devices at that level, and it allows teachers to do more and more. And this year we also have, for the STEM program, there's a dedicated CART too, because most of our curriculum is done through there, and then most of their work in terms of writing as well as the recording of and taking photos of has to be done through there. So more and more the students are going to come up with those skills. And I think going to your point too, I think the generation coming up is just more comfortable using the handheld devices than they are using computers. And I think about the kindergartners I'm working with now and even the early childhood kids who are more adapt using a device where they can touch it versus using a mouse. And so I think those skills are going to be built in anyway.
Well, this is also the first year that we've gone beyond the 3-year life cycle of the iPads. Are we keeping any of them?
So the eighth graders who graduated last year, their iPads were redeployed into the K-4. So each of the K-4 buildings got between 75 and 90.
Oh, nice.
iPads. One was to build a second cart. AJ has kind of taken one cart at each building to be the STEM cart. So we built a second cart to kind of model what, or keep what was there and accessible before. We've also now had the ability to put a pod of iPads, 3, 4, or 5, into each classroom. And that's really been the transition of the K-4s we're seeing, is the laptops that are not getting used. You know, there's too many flash updates, there's too many Java updates. It's just the kids are more in tune with scroll through, find the app that they're going to use, and work on that.
And how's the Wi-Fi backbone?
They had to do more access points at Willard, and I have to do more at Lincoln. Lincoln is now the area where I definitely see some, you know, some parts of the building are kind of dead, not dead zones, but you put 30 iPads in the classroom and the cart comes in there.
Right.
Yeah. And there's traffic problems.
D97, do we have so this is their first year, right, for rollout. What are they doing, K-4?
I believe they did 3, 4, 5.
They did all the middle school.
6, 7, 8. Yeah.
Starting in third grade, are we hearing anything from how that's going for them at all with the younger kids? Or?
I know, just
those of us that are living with some of those.
Yeah, you're living with
yeah,
I don't
okay.
believe the third and fourth graders are going home. Is that correct?
Yeah,
it's
just don't take them home.
After Christmas, okay.
Yeah. So slow
there. Okay.
In the upper grades, they did a rollout at the beginning of the year, and they came to all the devices. So far, so good from
mm-hmm.
what I hear and what I see from my own student, my child. Kevin, I know you've spoken with them, and Lindsay a little bit. You guys network with them. And
yeah, I meet with the tech director from 297 once a month. And that's definitely, you know, it's obviously something that 97 and 90 have in common. 200 has their, you know, what their plans are as well. But it's they're definitely going down with it. You know, they brought it down to third and fourth grade.
Hmm.
That's something we'll definitely have to talk about and think about.
Okay.
And just to piggyback what Kevin said, in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, now they're at the point where they get to refine, you know, the units and the procedures that they've been doing in class. So we have a teacher professional collaboration day on the 23rd, and I had somebody stop me in the hall and say, you know, I would love to learn something new, but I have something that I'm really proud of, and I want to take it to the next level. Can I just have, like, a corner in the room and then just, like, you know, work away at it? And so they are really proud of the things that they've been working on these last couple of years, and like she said, they're ready to take it to the next level, and so it's been helpful. So moving on to the professional development for educators, this year, now that we are one-to-one with the whole school, and it's not an initiative anymore, it's a new normal, we wanted to pull back and think about the bigger picture. So it's not, you know, we're not only focused on putting out the small fires of what happens when, you know, this app doesn't work or this or that, but really kind of what is best practice in technology integration? What does it mean to be innovative with technology? And how can we be more cohesive? And kind of what we're using as our skeleton are totally not things I made up. They actually exist out there that other people follow. And it's the International Society for Technology in Education, and that's ISTE.org if you've never been to the site. TPAC is something that we learned about in grad school. And it's just the framework of thinking about a successful teacher integrating technology needs to have a strong knowledge in technology and pedagogy and content. And then SAMR, which we talked about last year, and that is just more sophisticated uses of technology in the classroom. So ISTE has standards for students. And like I said before, ISTE sets the standard for what best practices looks like. It's not just something really cool that Lindsay wants you to do or Kevin wants you to do, but these are things that research has shown is meaningful for kids and for learning. And you've seen these standards before. It's creativity and innovation, it's communication and collaboration, research and information fluency, critical thinking, problem solving, and decision making, and digital citizenship. And where you've seen these before is when you've asked, well, what exactly are they doing with their iPads? And any time that we've given a survey to the students, all of the language is crafted around these words. So it's not just, I made an iMovie, I'm using it for creativity. And it's not just, I'm on Safari, but I'm using this tool for research. Mm-hmm. And ISTE also has standards for teachers. What would a teacher who's successfully integrating technology be doing in their classroom? They would be facilitating and inspiring student learning and creativity. They'd be setting up these occasions for students to be doing things creatively. They would be designing and developing digital age learning experiences and assessments. And so it's not just I'm using Edmodo, but I am designing and developing a learning experience that's now digital, that's now all my assessments are digital. That these teachers would also be modeling digital age work and learning, and they would be promoting and modeling digital citizenship and responsibility, and that they would be engaging in professional growth and leadership. Yeah, 5%. I want to talk faster.
I have it up online.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Back up.
So Roosevelt is in a great situation where they have two planning periods a day, and one planning period in the morning is for them to work in groups with their peers, and the other one in the afternoon is independent time. In the last 3 years, I've always grabbed a Tuesday a week, and I said, I'm coming to your meeting. And it's been more organic. Use Kevin's word, that I always grab onto. We're organic. And that was a lot of listening and a lot of kind of like sporadic helping, which was helpful. But now that we're in year four and everybody is ready to take it to the next level, we found ourselves at a point where we needed to have more structure. And so considering ISTE and considering the other two frameworks that I shared with you, this is the structure that we have when the teachers get together. So the first week they get together on a Tuesday, we go over what is that specific one student standard say? What does ISTE say about communication and collaboration? And then we chunk it out. We break it down. Well, what does this phrase mean? And what does this phrase mean? And how are we already hitting that? And how does this relate to the Common Core? Then the next week when we meet, we talk about the ISTE teacher standard. What does it mean to facilitate and inspire student learning and creativity? And does this have anything to do with the Danielson framework and how I'm going to be assessed? And yes, it does. And then the third week, we get out of our meeting space and we go into other people's classrooms and we see how they're using technology. And this is where it's fantastic that you said it's okay that fifth graders have iPads, because the fifth grade teachers were so happy to get out of their room and go into an eighth grade classroom and see, you know, get ideas from their peers and vice versa. So if we weren't in a one-to-one environment, sometimes it's hard for people to make that leap and say, oh, but this person is doing it on a laptop and I couldn't possibly do it on an iPad. And that's not always necessarily true, but it's helpful to see, in my class I have iPads and in this class they have iPads and this is how they're doing it, so maybe I could try that too. And then the last week we have share time. And that is teachers coming in and to a meeting with their student work and shooting into the Apple TV and projecting it and explaining to their peers, this is a project we did, or this is a rubric I shared, and help each other develop ideas. Does anyone have any questions so far? So again, considering kind of what's the next, what should I be doing when I'm thinking about technology integration? What I want for teachers is to be able to have that kind of professional language and really understand what we're really talking about. And so if we want to be successful, you have to understand, you have to have some knowledge of technology. And that's where I come in, and that's where, you know, Mandy and Anne-Marie come in. If you don't have the knowledge of technology, that you're leaning on a specialist and that specialist can help you out. And that speaks to a knowledge of resources. You know you have a specialist you can lean on, and you know we have a subscription to BrainPop or this or that, or, you know, the physical resources that we have, and the people. And also having a knowledge of technology, and these are all the Danielson framework, is demonstrating that knowledge, that flexibility and responsiveness. It's not if technology goes wrong, it's when technology goes wrong. And be able to gracefully just keep the show going. Also, what teachers have to be knowledgeable about is content. And so when we're talking, when they sit down with their specialist and they're planning a lesson or a unit, that's when it's our job to really ask them, what's the content that they're supposed to be learning in this unit? And we can suggest technology, but only if that technology is supporting the content that's supposed to be learned. And then knowledge of pedagogy. And that's also helpful that we have instructional specialists in the school too now. So we're really kind of leaning on all of the members of our professional community. SAMR, again, stands for substitution, augmentation, modification, and redefinition. So this, again, speaks to the more sophisticated uses of technology in the classroom. And no rung on this ladder is bad by any means. When we say substitution, that means that the new technology is just a direct substitute for, you know, old technology or no technology, but there's no real functional change. And that might be where some fifth grade teachers are at, and that's okay, because you have to start somewhere. And then when we talk about augmentation, we're talking about, it's a substitute, but there's also a functional improvement. For example, like using a spell checker or using the share features within Google Drive or something like that. And that would be, teachers understanding a knowledge of the resources, right? They know I should maybe do this in Google Drive if I want to share with my peer because we have different versions of Pages. so this makes more sense. When we say modification, Now we're talking about really a knowledge of students, because we're going to redesign the task to make it meaningful for the students that I have in my classroom. For example, a conversation we had today during share time was that two teachers were talking about how one student wasn't a particularly strong writer, but they were fantastic at making movies. So perhaps giving that student choice and being able to modify that task and say, well, this person can turn their work in as an unreadable something, because then that's digital storytelling. It's not a physical writing, but he still has to communicate a clear message, just in a different way. And then finally, you know, the part that seems so fancy, is actually very difficult to do, is redefinition. And so that would be using tech in a way that's a whole new task that's previously inconceivable. But when you have a device that has a camera and can take video and pictures and record and has access to the internet and you can take it anywhere, really the possibilities are endless. So we have a lot of teachers that are ready to think about how they can redefine the classroom. So that's a lot of information that I gave you, and it's hard to process. But we have an organizer that we found when we went to Tech Forum last May. And so when the teachers sit down and plan, they're thinking about, you know, if you look at this from the bottom up, well, what's the context? You know, who are the students that are coming with to me? What do they already know tech-wise? What do they already know content-wise? Then the left at the bottom is the learning objective. What's the content we want them to learn? And then to the right is the learning activity. So what's the way we want to teach this? And then as they move up the rung, either with their peers, their tech specialists, their curriculum specialists, together we're trying to design coherent instruction that's using it technology in a more innovative way. Does anybody have any questions so far?
Don't wait till you're done. But Lindsay, when we started this out, I mean, we were pretty much one of the few districts that was doing this, and I would imagine we're not that way anymore. And I noticed in here, like the ISTE standards and that sort of thing, things, you know, the outside world has kind of caught up with us. We're no longer the pioneers. And I was wondering, I haven't seen any articles talking about technology in the classroom. I was wondering what the world is thinking about it now. It's been out there for a few years, these one-on-one programs.
I think that people are really excited about, you know, the possibilities. And it's not, like you said before, it's not so much, you know, being that pioneer anymore. It's not necessarily something that people would even bat an eye about. For example, when you come in, when you're doing a research project and they come into the library, you know, to do some research and check out the books, they're automatically also going to want to use online resources. So it's just kind of that inevitability that Kevin had always talked about. And to take the technology out of the student hands at this age, I think would, for some students, they would feel like, we're preventing them from doing the great things that they'd like to do.
Well, when they go to Oak Park, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, what I tell teachers when they, or not necessarily, it's not necessarily teachers, but when people ask me that, are we setting kids up for something that they're not going to have? That's when I bring them back to the standards for students. So I'm not saying, here's this iPad, understand this iPad in and out. I don't understand the iPad in and out. But what we're really talking about is, are we teaching them about information fluency? Are we teaching them about being a good digital citizen? Are we teaching them how they can collaborate with people digitally? And so that transfers. Even if the high school isn't one-to-one, they are going to be having digital experiences with their students. And so we need to be preparing them for the bigger picture.
Is there any risk in the modification process that certain skills won't be developed?
Well, I'd like to think that with the instructional specialist and the teacher thinking about what's the learning outcome, that it doesn't matter the vehicle that the student uses
to show
it? Well,
it does, though.
It
actually does. So if a kid is weak in writing, but they can communicate a story well through a movie, and they're allowed to communicate it through the movie, when do they work on the writing?
Yeah.
I mean, so what I'm saying is modification can, in fact, become a problem. So I'm wondering if this has been thought about, if it's talked about, or if it's an issue that's come up. Because certain skills, you know, I'll say part of this is coming from where I exist. I teach at the master's level. And I can tell you I see a range of skill sets from kids that have come through high-end skills of schools on things as basic as grammar and writing that's unbelievable. So when I hear modification, I get that could be a real positive thing. It could really bring out a kid's innate ability to express her or himself in a very specific way, but that doesn't let the kid work on where they're weak. So you have to make sure that modification doesn't become substitution for developing all the skill sets they need. So when they go to Oak Park River Forest, they don't have this.
Well, Ralph, I know one of the reasons why I asked is I have Jesse, who's at St. Ignatius, and they have an iPad program, and I have Katie at Oak Park, and they don't. And both of them only had the iPads here for 1 year, and both have seemed to have adapted fine. Katie's doing well in Oak Park, and Jesse's doing well at Ignatius, having gone different routes. So I didn't see it as much of a problem, but my concern is going to be, after 3 or 4 years of this, is it going to be a more substantial drop-off?
Yeah, Jesse and Nick, for instance, only had it for
1 year.
1 year.
And so did Kate.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, Kate.
Yeah.
So
I think the high school's going to move a lot quicker.
There's a lot of pressure on them.
And in the tech conversations, it's all like, oh, you know, we should probably do iPads because 97 and 90 are doing iPads. And in conversations with them, it's sort of like they're leaning towards Chromebooks. And I don't know that that's a horrible idea, because it goes to the point of what Lindsay's saying. You know, we're not teaching them to use an iPad. We're teaching them these greater concepts, and they're going to be able to use that greater knowledge on whatever device and whatever environment they find themselves.
I don't think the brand matters.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why.
I think there's a certain amount of. Apple is very good at integrating, seamlessly between a Mac, and particularly with iOS 8 now, it's becoming even more seamless between an iPad and a Mac. So I don't know if it's going to be that interchangeable.
Right, and well, Google's sort of taking over the world too, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fight for...
but to get back to your original question of, you know, where do they... What's changed? I think this presentation is an example of, it's not me standing in front of you talking about the 750 iPads that are out there and this percentage are breaking, and we're talking about real things that have changed.
Well, just the fact that you have SAMR and ISTE sheets in here tells me that this is now, I assume we did not develop these ourselves. These are things that have been developed as part of the, I'm not saying we couldn't. Don't get me wrong.
No, ISTE's been a lot. We were talking about ISTE when we had carts of laptops.
Oh,
you
really?
Know, how,
oh,
we,
okay.
How are we changing because of these carts of laptops?
Yeah.
You know,
but the world does seem to be catching up.
Oh, very much so. Yes.
And please write down ISTE.org somewhere and check it out, if because they have a lot of information there. But also, you mentioned that your students only having them for 1 year, and. This seems very tech-heavy because I'm the tech person presenting on technology in the classroom, but the teachers and the students all know this is one tool of many tools they have access to in school. So they are still reading from physical books, and they are still writing with pencil on paper, and they are still painting, and they are still acting and singing and dancing and drawing and stuff. So don't think that we're turning your kids into robots, because we're not.
Well, so on that point, do we monitor screen time? Are we worried about? I hear that from a lot of parents. It's not sort of an issue in my own home, but I know there are a lot of parents are concerned about total hours staring at whatever device that happens to be.
And there's an opportunity cost to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Lindsay, thoughts on that, or what are you seeing?
Well, I did have a child a year ago, and so he has a nose.
Does he already have an iPhone?
No. He has an iWatch. Screen time policy, because I follow the Academy of Pediatrics, and that means, like, even if he goes to Grandma and Grandpa's house, they are not allowed to have the TV on, and if they balk at that, then they don't babysit. So I did do my research as a parent, too, and I don't have the exact number, but I remember them specifically saying that it was, and the hours that were on the American Academy of Pediatrics was kind of like general play time. So they didn't count like working on a screen versus passively consuming on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I have a strict no screen time for my child, he Skypes with his in-laws, because that's not passively sitting him in front of a TV watching a game, but he's talking to a screen and the screen is talking back to him and he knows something is going on. So I would liken that to the kids actively working on their iPad doing their homework. That's not the same as like them playing video games in their room for hours.
A lot of the current research going on about that is dividing screen time into those two different things, a passive versus an active, and just counting the screen time. And this is just stuff that's kind of starting to roll around now in terms of researchers. But there's, because of the increased screen time, and they're talking about teenagers now being above the number of hours awake of the screen time they have because of they're constantly working and they have two or three screens going at the same time. It's not showing that their brains are shutting down like just sitting there and watching TV, but they're actually, it's firing at the exact same time in ways that haven't been seen before. I don't know if it's positive yet. I don't know if it's negative yet. The researchers who are doing that now, but they are starting to separate passive versus active screen time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
I used to listen to the radio when I did homework in college and law school, and now my daughters have music, they have Skype, they have their homework, and they have some TV show going on all at the same time.
My
and
high school,
guys, you got to shut it down.
My high schooler consistently has a computer on when she's doing her homework where she is talking to her classmates, and I'm right there next to her, and I can hear the conversations they're having, and helping each other out on what
right.
they're working on. It's still screen time, technically, but it's clearly a type of screen time that wouldn't go into that old school thought of just it's a child sitting in front of a TV. Again, I can't tell you if it's good or bad yet, but it's clearly a different kind of screen time going on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We also wanted to speak to how we're including all of our stakeholders, and it looks like the your slides look a little bit different. I just broke them up. So we thought about how we can, in our areas of improvement, how can we better involve parents, and we have a parent tech tips site that was developed last year, and there's some updates. On the left side, at the top of the screen, it speaks again to how the decision was made to be a one-to-one iPad program. On the right side of the screen are just frequently asked questions. Is there an acceptable use policy? Do you have things limited at school so they're not, you know, just playing all day? And then the left side of the screen takes them straight to the resources for their students. So if they're a seventh grade student, they tap on that page and it takes them to the seventh grade website and tells them how to log in and this and that. So we want to give some of that ownership back to the parents. And then we also have a parent night on the 23rd. And that is going to walk them through, these are the apps your student has on their device, this is how they're using it, these are some troubleshooting things that might come up at home. We also wanted to include our aides. So at Roosevelt last year, all of our aides received iPads, and together with the, what's Jackie's title?
RTI
Special Ed Facilitator. We worked together to think about what training an aide would need that would really be beneficial to the work that they do with their students. And so it's been really helpful that the aides have their own iPads now too. And they're also invited to all of our Tech Tuesdays, and anytime we are learning something together, it's that information to shout out to everybody at Roosevelt. So we really want to make sure that everyone's included. And we're not giving administration a break either. So there are ISTE standards for administrators. There's ISTE standards for people who are in a coaching role like I am. And so for administrators, once a month, there's a monthly information video that just kind of explains this is the standard, breaking it down chunk by chunk, and giving them some examples from other districts. It formally starts next month. They got their overview this month. But then some discussion questions, because tech is not going away, and we shouldn't think of it as an afterthought. So letting them have this discussion, continued discussion, so that they are strong visionary leaders with regards to technology. And finally, teachers. We have, I told you earlier, 3 district-wide professional collaboration afternoons, and that's going to be nice to have the teachers from all buildings come together and really have some teacher-to-teacher PD. So sharing, this is a tool that I'm using with my students or for my record keeping or for my teaching, and this is why I think it's helping my students. Because teachers really respect hearing from another person in the field. You know, hearing the pitfalls, hearing the peaks, and learning together. It's really building our professional community. I think it's STEM now. Does anyone have any more questions about Roosevelt?
How is the loss rate in fifth grade so far?
Fifth grade's been great. I think I had 1
fifth grade
I've had.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. You could teach the eighth grade or something.
Yes.
I don't even get it. I have 1 slide. It's tough to follow Lindsay. She has all these slides, but considering I'm getting used to teaching kindergartners, as long as most of you are paying attention, no one goes and stands in the corner for a while, I figure this was a rousing success. So. STEM. For those of you who don't know, STEM is a blend of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Together in a real world setting. It's not a matter of teaching these things in isolation. Now we're going to talk about math, now we're going to talk about technology, now we're going to talk about engineering, which wouldn't be something we're talking about science that you would. It's about how do these things come together. Why we're doing STEM? Obviously, more and more in this world, we're getting those things coming together, and the fields are growing exponentially by the day. We need to have students who are ready to address them and have those skills in their back pocket from the time they hit, when they hit you. When they're hitting middle school, when they're hitting the job market, these are the jobs that are building. The technology program we did have at the elementary school is the one I'm the position, I took that position, and more of that work is being forced now back into the classroom with people like Lindsay, and we have Anne Marie and Mandy at the elementary levels who are working to integrate it. We're not losing anything. In fact, I was in the computer lab over at Lincoln today, and I had to leave. It's the room I'm using because a class was coming in to do some writing work that they would have been normally doing during computer time, but it's being integrated into their writing during the course of the day. So we're not really losing any of those skills, and we're kind of increasing the number because it's blending together now, and it's becoming more of a real-world situation for how they're using the technology, and it's not going to be something where now's the time you go do tech. And I'm going to kind of think back to when I was in high school and I learned to type. Typing was a skill that you did in isolation. And typing is something that I do every day just as I'm wandering around, and the students are doing it more and more. So as we take those skills, it was a chance for us to kind of increase an area when we went with this STEM. The other part that STEM does, and is really good at an elementary level, is that there's a lot of student engagement. And we moved from doing things. A lot of the STEM program, and I'll get to the project Lead the Way in a moment, which is what we went with, is a hands-on approach to learning. It's not, you're going to sit at this computer and do it, and a lot of the kids are getting used to that. They run into the computer lab now, and they're still trying to grab the mouse. I'm like, stop. You're going to build today. You're going to build these devices, and you're going to see how they work, and you're going to have to think through the problems that you have. So it's less of a... It's a less of a of just a skill in isolation, more of a how does it work together. Project Lead the Way started in around 2000 in New York, and it actually started as just a New York program. It was actually for high schoolers. It has been slowly moving down over the years. Our middle school has actually been using it now for about 2 years, and this is the first year that they've actually had what they call the launch program. The launch program is kindergarten through fifth grade. We're just doing the kindergarten through fourth grade. They have a process where they do activities which lead to projects which lead to a problem. For every unit we have, for every module that the kids have to go through, they start with this overarching question, this problem they're going to have to solve at the end. As in, the third graders, it's how are you going to deliver relief supplies across this area? And the whole point, what they have to learn about is how to fly. And if we start with these activities where they're talking about balancing forces, and that leads to projects where they're starting to use things, where they're building gliders, and eventually they have to take their gliders that they build and use them to fly across. They're very excited right now because they're starting to get to the point where they're taking off the ground with apps that are allowing them to see how lift and thrust and weight all kind of come together for flight. So it's really interesting to see them, that they're using that technology and coming together. Project Lead the Way also has this system that they have, which is the engineering side of it, which has an entire model that they'll be working with for all 5 years that they're, 4 years here, 5 years here in the launch program, hopefully six. And I think it can carry on where they go through and ask, then they, where they ask what the problem is, and then they start to look at how they can, what tools they have that are available to them. They then start to model. From the model, they start to test the different programs they have, and eventually they have to explain it. And it actually brings it back. The Project Lead the Way stuff is all aligned from Common Core as well as the Next Generation Science Standards. So they're reading, they're writing that are Common Core aligned for their grade level. And then it also has all those, the science standards, and it's also aligned to the AC standards as well. So everything's combined within the program. You look like you have a question.
No.
Oh, okay.
He just always looks confused.
He just always looks confused. It's a deep thought that borders on.
It's a perpetual.
Right now, Project Lead the Way STEM, the launch program, has two modules per grade level, which is about 10 class hours, which is about 20 class hours, which is about exactly what I'm seeing the students for the year. They're adding two more next year. One is going to be a biomed, which I would guess is going to be more towards the bio side than the med side at the elementary level. I don't think they're going to get a lot of med stuff yet. I do know at the high school level they do have a crime scene investigation class that is very popular in a lot of the schools, because when I went for my training over the summer, they had the biomed training in the exact same building, and I was happy I wasn't involved, but it seemed like everyone who was talking about it was like, the students love it, they can't get enough of it. And then they're also adding a computer science one, which will probably be mostly of a coding programs. And I'm thinking that because of the way they have their coding involved in some of their other stuff, the fifth grade stuff is robotics, and the second half of what they have to do is program a robot to do what they need to do. So I would guess that's what it's going to be. Right now here in District 90, I have every student from kindergarten through fourth grade for 30 minutes a week. As I said, most...
They say it's not enough. It's the only thing I had to say tonight.
I wonder who could have possibly said that to you when on Friday a young man by the name of Fisher looked at me and said, this is too short. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. If you only knew a board member. I get them for 30 minutes a week, and it is. It's really quick. Because a lot of it is, you learn a little bit, and then you're supposed to start to apply it, and it's building on top of it. So it's very quick. But it's fabulous to see, because we're actually learning a lot of new things we haven't seen before out of students. And there was a great thing out of a kindergarten classroom recently. The kindergartners start with structure and function. And the first part is reading Jack and the Beanstalk, and then they have to construct a beanstalk as tall as they can with 10 pipe cleaners. It's all they get. It can't attach to anything. It has to just come up. I was dealing with one of the classes, and afterwards a teacher came up to me and said, this one student is really doing well. I said, of course, yeah, look at what he's doing, because I wouldn't have expected that. He's been struggling with his reading, he's been struggling with his math. It's great to see him have the success, and it was great to see him kind of take pride in this. And she goes, and that student seems to be struggling. I'm like, that seems to surprise you as well. She goes, he always has the right answer. And it was interesting, because it was starting to see the fact that some of the students may be succeeding because there is a right answer, and when it was wide open and they had this problem they had to solve, suddenly it was more of a struggle and they needed to dig in and show some resilience. So getting that chance to build in something that's normally not part of our curriculum is fabulous to see. And it was a great, you know, real world situation to see these two students and how they were doing.
Yeah, we've been, as a board, we've been spending some time on talking about how boys learn, how girls learn, and the differences that kind of follow them through their years here at D90. Is the program you're talking about, is that, do you feel like it's reaching the boys and girls equally, or do you see differences even kind of going back into third, fourth grade?
I'd say it's real early to kind of make that kind of division. What I would say is that I see some students who, when I talk to their teachers, beyond just that one situation, I can think of a couple of third grade students too, third grade teachers who have come to talk to me about students. I'm seeing kids come in with a different energy at times, and it's not necessarily just boys or girls. I think it's going to take me more time to get used to that. I haven't seen anybody yet come into the classroom from K to 4 who's not ready or not excited about what we're doing. And they're always at some point, you always get some, you know, classes that are coming in a different energy, but you can turn that around. And the fact that they are all kind of getting this, okay, we're not just going to sit here, we're going to get up, we're going to have to do this work. Some of it's going to be groups, which has been another fabulous part of it, is that seeing, being able to problem solve and work through these items all the time is, as a group, is good. I, having a daughter, I've always been concerned about kind of the math and science side of things, just to make sure that she was kind of going into it. I haven't seen anything yet. Mm-hmm. But it's really early right now. So yeah. If I start seeing that kind of fade in different areas, it would be something we would address.
If you start to see things, feedback you could give us as a board would be real helpful.
I'd be happy to. My gut feeling is because of the way that in the long run they have to solve these problems, that they're never really, as long as they're excited about what they're solving. And again, so much of this is exciting. The fourth graders are building car restraints, kind of the old classic egg rolling down a hill to learn about energy and transfer of energy. So they have to build these pendulums first, and from the pendulums they build the cars, and from the cars they have to start building their restraint systems. So they seem to be at this point across the board buying into it, you know, as a general whole. But I will be, I'll keep an eye on that for you and let you know.
You know, Pat, we talked about this a little bit at our board retreat, just the project-based approach to pedagogy, that it seems to really stimulate students to learn better and deeper and across racial and gender lines, mm-hmm. and across socioeconomic lines.
Yeah.
It's really been very successful as a model. And you talk about some of the most poorly performing schools in the country, Detroit, but there's two or three that have gone to project-based model, and the kids, they have like a 98% graduation rate from the high school, and those kids not just go to college, but stay in college and graduate college as well at like a 78% rate, which is off the chart. And a lot of it goes back to this approach to pedagogy, putting things together, problem solving, making the kids excited about learning. So it's a real powerful vehicle, and it's been proven out.
Mm-hmm.
The student investment side is what always seems to be, you know, just completely, you know, it increases the learning at that point that they do just buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not only, when you talk about the project side of it, that's something that I've not only seen this year, but in the projects that I've done in the past, in when I was a second grade teacher, you could see the difference between when the students had that investment because there was a project or a problem that they had to solve. It's kind of neat in this one because you get the projects that lead to the problems, and that problem is going to be with them the entire time of how do we solve this problem.
IIT has a bridge building contest every year, and I don't know if Oak Park does it. I know St. Ignatius does it. I've done it with Jesse every year.
So they put the weight on the bridge to see what
collapses. You get a limited amount of supply, and it has to be a certain weight, and you can do whatever design you want, but it has to meet certain specifications, and then they add bricks to it, and they figure out how much weight it would hold. And Jesse is not an engineering-motivated child, but when she sees a bridge like the one we've built, she's like, oh, that's what we did, and the geometry of triangles and stuff like that. I mean, it is very powerful. The other thing, would an Estes Rocket Club help you?
Say no.
This is the first time this has come up.
Because I think that would be a really, really cool.
I don't think there's ever a time when you're talking about these kind of problem solving and these kind of engineering stuff that more is bad. It's a matter of how it all
that's
fits.
That's what I like to hear.
Was that political enough to kind of appease everybody at this point? Then?
It's a little too encouraging.
Downplay it a little bit more than that, you think? But I would say what's also kind of come out of this, actually, is the fact that on the first day when I was talking, first day across dealing with everybody, I started talking to every students about how math was everywhere, and I've had a couple parents come back and say, it's great that you said that, because a lot of students don't think about math because they only think about it in isolation.
Right,
and the fact
right.
that this program, not just the Project Lead the Way, but STEM in general, is more of an integrated with the writing, integrated with the reading, integrated with the math, it starts to bring it more alive for the students, and it starts to get them thinking that it's not, I'm just going to sit down, you know, the first day I said it, I'm never going to tell you to stop working on what you're doing, and do these math sheets, and we're going to move on. It's going to be, what is the velocity, what is the angle, what is happening here, you're going to have to measure this out, tell me about this. That's the way math comes into our lives.
Yep.
So that real world cycle is where the STEM program, I think, is really going to be successful.
Yeah, I think
they're
incremental, so we just knew it.
And David, the added benefit of this approach is it does lead to deeper learning, so kids tend to retain the knowledge far longer than just learn it for a test and then forget
forever.
It. Forever. Which is what standard pedagogical approaches tend to end up with. So it's really got some aspects to it.
Oh, very exciting.
Very exciting.
And I think for the district, for the students, for everyone, I think at that point. And that's really all I had.
Good.
I'll answer any other questions.
Yeah, were there some next steps recommended?
And that's my slide.
Is that your slide? Because I think that'll be more helpful.
Hold on, let me see if there were next steps. Hey, there's next steps.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I say next steps, but I think it's as much an area of focus now. So
okay.
When I think about next steps, so certainly it's continuing to build this STEM culture, and it's really what we've talked about. It's about project-based learning. It's about the STEM curriculum specifically, which, as AJ's pointed out so well, is really about math and science and writing and problem solving and all of those things. We have built this program now at K-4, which AJ is talking about, that's now been in place for almost exactly 6 weeks, so really very much in the early stages. We have the programming going on through exploratories in 7th and 8th grade. We know we have this 5th, 6th grade, part of the schedule that we need to solve, and we need to resolve that. And there's been a lot of conversation already, but we actually happen to have kind of some perfect storms that had occurred, as you all know, that our computer teacher retired and said, don't replace me with me. We're no longer about tech for tech's sake. And I think both Lindsay and AJ have pointed that out, and you know that, but I think this is really the world that our kids are living in and the world in which, you know, we are educating them in now. So, but that's brought some interesting little bumps in the road, like, well, I always used to do this in computer class, so where does that skill belong? Is it about writing but using the computer or the iPad for doing student writing? Is it about practicing for online tests? You know, I mean, there's all these other elements. So again, Lindsay and her counterparts, Mandy and Anne-Marie, are working really with every grade level team, saying this is where we want kids, where we want their skills to be in terms of technology. Again, not for tech for tech's sake, but those skills that are really embedded in everything else they're doing. And we're really committed to this STEM programming, so we gotta find a way to make sure that those other tech skills get integrated. Happens pretty easily. I know Kevin's pointed out to you how many iPads are at the elementary. Certainly in the one-to-one environment, it really just continues to sort of build and evolve. So it's really about building this culture around STEM learning. It's really about making the best of this one-to-one environment and why we do it, not because we're pioneers, but because it's how our children learn. It's really a tool. Technology is really a tool that engages children and brings them those opportunities around creativity and research fluency and those big standards and those big areas of learning that we've been talking about. So I'm really excited about this year. I'm excited about exactly what you're hearing about tonight, but I think it also really represents a place where District 90 has absolutely grown. It's about the kids. We know it's always about the kids, but how is technology that tool that brings it forward? How is STEM a tool that brings some of the best out of our children in terms of the skills they have, the skills they need to continue to develop? So that's really where we are, and this is really important work, and we really always appreciate the support we've had from you to work on it. So.
Hey, Martha, just somewhat related issue that we've talked about at some recent board meetings around space planning, making changes down in Lincoln, for example, and we've also talked about, you know, just tonight around these dedicated computer labs, and it's only a matter of time before that goes away. Is what are we looking at here in terms of the horizon? What if we said, you know, so Kevin, if the challenge was starting at the beginning of the 15-16 school year, we would no longer have dedicated computer labs. Is that a good thing, a bad thing?
Probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Probably recapture some space. You know, I know AJ talks about it a lot. You know, he was telling me before the meeting, and Angie going in there and saying, don't use these computers, push them all to the side. And then you've got these tables you can lay out everything that you're using.
I mean, we're always looking for space.
Right.
And is that the direction maybe we ought to start
with? One caveat to that is that the STEM stuff tends to take a lot of space.
Yeah.
Because there are, as they get more elaborate, you know, one of the reasons we tore out the glass in the glass lab was to let there be more space. You've got these kits get elaborate. You get two or three classes at a time going through this, you know, building their elaborate kits. They need to store all of that stuff someplace. They need to have access to their kit, you know, however big it is, and put that aside. But again, like, you know, I'm impressed by the STEM stuff at the K-4s. It's all iPad-based. All of the apps are on an iPad. Hmm. So that's small. That's not something that has to chew up an entire desktop area. You know, we've had to continue to have our labs this year for standardized testing, primarily. Certainly at the K-4s is one of the big reasons for map testing. We have to have a lab with 30 machines that we know are reliable network connections to do it. This will be the last year that we do map testing in the current format of client server technology. It'll all be web-based. It'll all work on iPads. The park testing, as we go forward, we're going to try and do that at the middle school, at least on their iPads. We're going to use the TestNav app that they recommend. So it's going to definitely change the environments. I don't think we're going to necessarily say, like, okay, now that lab can be a classroom, but it can certainly not have as many computers in it and be a STEM space. I don't know if that answers.
Yeah, no, it's helpful. Yeah, so I guess what I'm hearing is this isn't 5 years out. This is sooner than that. We ought to be able to redeploy space, perhaps oftentimes within the STEM structure, but not just to have dedicated spaces to have big computers sitting on the desk.
I know Mary has told us in the STEM lab, in the STEM rooms here, that laptops should be better suited to laptops because there are days where they don't need a desk, they don't use the computer, they're purely playing with the VEX kits. And then there are days where it's really intense and we've got to be doing coding, we're doing a lot of modeling. We want to have laptops that have bigger screens so they can see it all laid out. I think certainly desktops are a thing of the past.
Certainly laptop desktops with full CPUs.
Oh, yes.
If they're going to be internet best, all you need is a semi-smart screen and a Wi-Fi Bluetooth keyboard.
Right.
And telephone dial-in modem.
Right.
So David had asked a question earlier that I think is a poignant one in terms of kind of bringing this really outstanding and helpful presentation more toward closure. You know, his question was about whether or not we're still kind of on the cutting edge. And as far as the deployment of the technology itself, I would say that we're not. In large part, that's because a lot of the really hard and focused work has gone into place to make that happen. Where the district needs to remain on the cutting edge, however, is the manner in which it's deployed. The supports that we are or are not providing for teachers in integrating technology into their instruction seamlessly. That's where the cutting edge is now. And to see the work that our specialists are doing, the high quality work, the supports they're providing for teachers, that's really where the rubber meets the road. There are many, many districts who have succeeded in allocating their funding toward purchasing technology. That is happening in many affluent communities, but the manner in which they're mobilizing that is very inconsistent. And I think we have a lot to be proud of in the leadership that certainly is within this room and elsewhere within the district that's helping to ensure that the technology that's been purchased is being used in the manner in which we hope it can be. The vision here is that this type of work can act as the accelerant for our district towards the creation of programs and the support of teachers implementing things like project-based learning, more integrated instruction. That's really what we'll be cutting edge moving forward, making sure the teachers have the resources at their disposal and the professional development to know when and how to deploy them in supporting kids' learning is the key. And we'll have to suss that out as we go. But we feel like we're sowing the seeds for that here and now. And it's going to, there will be implications on our facilities. There will be implications on our faculty and staff, the supports that we provide to faculty and staff in professional development. Please don't be surprised. I ask of the Board of Education that we will likely be coming back to you in the relative near future with some staffing requests that are going to reflect our need for some continued foresight in the way in which we configure both instructional technology support as well as raw technology support. You know, at the moment we have in this district now over, is it accurate to say over 1,000 devices?
Almost 2,000 devices.
2,000, okay. And 1,000 that have been deployed within the last 3 years.
Hmm.
That all require formatting, support, maintenance. We're having some trouble very legitimately managing some of the operational tasks of supporting this technology. And, you know, that's who would have seen that coming? I guess, you know, you put all of that hardware out there, you expect that sooner or later you're going to have those kinds of needs. But in order for us to stay cutting edge and to look to the future, we're going to need to continue to have long-range planning and vision and be making some very deliberate decisions and choices with the resources that we have.
And speaking of which, and so to Pat's question on the facilities, I would like our tech people to think about that. So I know, for instance, in healthcare, they've gone to far less standard hard brick-and-mortar construction of hospitals and modular that could be easily modified to a if, in fact, we're going to more of this STEM and project-based stuff, do we need a multi-purpose room for project-based?
Flexible
work,
space.
Right, flexible space that can incorporate different aspects of a project-based learning approach from a technological standpoint all in one room. Monitors on the wall, 3D printer, you know, whatever you're going to need to do the different things, what would that look like? Think about it as things go down the road, because I think we would like to be able to plan for that stuff and modify accordingly,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And a lot of this was triggered by our conversation over Lincoln, and we're not ready to do this yet. We don't really have, but if we gain their input, I think we could be very thoughtful about this from a long term and really create an a learning environment that's conducive to this project-based approach.
That raises a question. Do we have, like, I know we have a strategic plan for the district. Do we have a tech 5-year, 6-year, 2-year tech plan?
We have a 3-year tech plan. This is the first year of that new plan. But in terms of, and that's, historically we've done it, use the blueprint of the Illinois State Board of Education, their blueprint for a tech plan, and we wrote it using their blueprint to qualify for E-rate.
Right.
E-rate has undergone some pretty dramatic changes in the last few months. Districts are no longer going to have to write a tech plan in that format for E-rate. So right now it's sort of this limbo stage of, like, you want to do a tech plan, you can do a tech plan, go for it. The state's not going to provide you a blueprint.
And I mean by tech plan, I don't necessarily just mean the hardware type stuff. I'm talking about STEM too. I mean, talking about integrating technology and project based, like Mark Ralph. Do we have a where we want to be in 3 or 4 years?
Other than that, you know, this being the first year of that 3-year plan, we don't.
Yeah.
And I think the good news is that we don't have to write a tech plan to do E-rate and use
right.
their blueprint. The
right.
bad news is we don't have to write a tech plan to get
right.
E-rate.
And if we don't have to do it, we don't do it.
Well, right. Or, you know, and we should. I still argue we have to do something in-house to have that vision. Say,
right.
3 years from now, we want to have STEM at all of these grade levels. Or, you know, 5 years from now, this is what we hope it's going to look like. I think it's going to free us up to write a tech plan that's more true to what we want, as opposed to, like, I can't really talk about that because it doesn't fit into the blueprint that the state wants.
Right.
But, you know, what I thought, you know, Lindsay, back to your presentation on the SAMR, is that the way you pronounce it?
No.
Strategy of trying to move from the yellow up to the green over time. I mean, that seemed to me like that's a great starting point for
the other thing I was just going to add in too, and I know it's the next item on our agenda, is strategic planning. So our strategic plan will have students use, you know, sort of a visioning for our children's future that will include the appropriate use of technology. So I think, you know, one of the things we've talked a lot about is about our student learning plan. Like, where do we want our students to go? And technologies are part of that. So it's interesting. The state's saying, you don't need to tell us how many computers you need to buy and how many laptops and how many iPads. So now we're really saying, like, how do we want student learning to change, which I think is about the SAMR model.
Now that Roosevelt's in a one-to-one environment, we're looking at how can existing structures that we have, like BLT, the Building Leadership Team, take on some of the decision-making and thinking about the direction we want the school to go, because it's no longer Lindsay and Kevin's pet project that's happening to the eighth grade, but everybody has, you know, some stake in the direction that we're taking the school in. So we're thinking about how do some of these existing structures, how could they have somebody at each grade level contribute to that conversation and make decisions.
Mm-hmm. Liz, what were you going to say? I have a question about, it's very similar to the space question, but it's really something you were just getting to, Martha, about the time. How is instructional time used for these purposes, and how does STEM fit into the Common Core? Because I feel like there are going to be some very real demands on the instructional time for the things that lead directly to the you can really argue that they're directly related to the Common Core, but then there are things like this that are much maybe less direct. And I think of things like foreign language and the arts and the music program. I think in the strategic plan, it's going to be really important to lay that out so that it, you know, when we talk about the whole child, but what's the right ratio of everything going forward? And I think maybe a lot of it's flipped based on what you said tonight, that now technology isn't a separate piece, it's an integrated piece, but it's probably a lot harder than to measure and design the future.
Like, I think if you went and watched AJ teach, you'd say, well, this is science. We could, and we've talked about that. Does the natural part of what AJ does become our science instruction? Because actually it's perfectly aligned to our next generation science standard. I think there's a different day you could watch him teach and say, actually, no, I'd say what's more math? No, it's actually some, you know, so what is it? You know, what cubby does it belong in?
What do you do?
Right.
He appears to be dancing today for some reason.
But it's really, no, but I'm saying it's really, you know, AJ, you said it best. It's all of that. Where does it belong?
It depends on which class and at which time is what it ends up looking like. But I think the correct answer in the long run is it ends up looking more like a real life situation. Is that at times there are, you know, you need to stop and read about what you're doing in order to figure out where you're going to go next. And so at times the students will be in the middle of something and you've got to read this and we're going to move on to the next part. Or there's a video over here you're going to watch. I mean, I had some third graders today who I said, you're going to go watch this presentation on flight so that you can come back and work on your app to see how you're flying along. I guess that's what it looks like.
Is it conceivable that you could get to a place where you said, we're X percent project-based learning in this school, and those project-based learning modules relate to the structure of the Common Core in these ways?
Because at the end of the day, and Common Core speaks a lot to this too, it's all about integration of learning. You know, it's about deeper learning, as you talked about. It's about sustained learning that really makes sense and gives you a place in the world around, you know, ultimately college and career, right? So.
There isn't one right formula, right? And we have to figure out for our district and for our kids what that is. And traditionally, and Marissa and Ed, you can, teachers are always like going along and they have all of their demands and then technology comes along and it's like, oh my God, we can do all this great stuff. And education is like, oh, well, we're doing our stuff and I don't know how to integrate all of your stuff. And there's kind of this push-pull relationship, right? Like, you can give me a smart board, but if you don't have really cool programming for high schoolers, which so much smart board stuff is for elementary school, then high school smart board isn't like, okay, but if there's not great stuff for high schoolers to do on it, then it's kind of useless. So it's this push-pull of dialogue and what's going to be best and how can we use the technology. STEM is the best thing I've seen to really integrate all of that in terms of the integrated learning, all of the different subjects, the technology piece, like really coming together to teach seamlessly with all of those pieces. But it isn't, every school is struggling to know, and just what Ed was saying, like, okay, we have this technology piece, and we have the teaching piece, and how can we use this to improve student learning, and what do we want our kids to know, and what, it's not just a typewriter. Like, let's, you know, like, so how can we up that, the use to really make that learning, and that kids are using flight, like, third graders are getting to experience flight, like, that's, to me, like, we can't do that. We can't go take a field trip on that. We can't go, I want them to paint in art class. Get out your paintbrush and paint. I don't want them to paint on an iPad. But flight? Okay, cool.
Well, the interesting, kind of the next STEM out, I mean, if you talk about the next step is actually the A, when you talk about art adding to it, is A is the STEAM part of it. And
right.
Actually, it's going to go into art, going to design and build paintbrushes eventually. That's the problem they have to solve, is that if you're going to make a painting and you have nothing to paint with, how are you going to apply the paint? Function, the structure that you're going to build, and the function you're going to come out of. So, I mean, art goes right into it as well. So,
it's a growing pain here for STEM, I think. And what we heard as we went to visit STEM schools was, you'll start to see your science teachers and math teachers say, "Oh, you learned that in STEM class? Well, that's exactly what we're doing in math class." Or the kids will bring it up of like, "Oh, we sort of talked about this in STEM the other day."
Mr. Peters already told me that.
So they've said, you know, as it progresses, there starts to be that overlap, and some of the things that AJ might be doing in the STEM class could be taken over by a science teacher during their science class, and those two could work together. Like, you know, AJ introduces a concept for half an hour, they go back to their classroom and do that same problem in their science class.
Yeah, so my assumption would be, maybe I'm assuming wrong, so AJ can tell me no, but that there's an articulation between what they have to do for Common Core and how they're designing their STEM programming, which is why STEM could be sort of a paradigm for actually the application of the Common Core principles.
And realize our excitement around Project Lead the Way, which is essentially a national curriculum organization, did that work for us. That these are the Common Core state standards. These are next generation science standards. This is what we know about student learning. And here are modules. So AJ went and, you know, participated in a week-long training that was really all about, it was curriculum.
It was an introduction to all the current curriculum they have, and I'll probably have to go next summer to learn about the new modules that they're putting out. By the time they're done, their curriculum will cover every single one of the next generation science standards, and it will still all be Common Core aligned as well as ITTE aligned. So, I mean, it's going to hit everything. It wouldn't be enough to fill a day, but it's going to have just about everything too.
But then you're also promoting that deeper learning, which is what Common Core is supposed to do anyway. So it should, I hate to say this, and I'm going to say it anyway, so it should even show up in the test scores.
Yes, it should.
Well, and to bring it back to what Dr. Condon said, now our district would be a pioneer if we recognize that we're investing in the people that have to do this work, that it's not done for them. So AJ has Project Lead the Way that has figured out how to integrate all of these, you know, pieces. But the average foreign language teacher now has to spend time, you know, with her instructional specialist, with her technology specialist, with her materials, and figure out how to integrate all of these pieces together. And so that's our next step. That's our next direction.
From the tech side.
The other thing I worry about a little bit is 30 minutes a week is not enough, right?
No, it is not.
To really, and so you don't want to get into, you want the program to be successful, so how much time to really get. So we're going to see, are we going to see gains, and is it a great program? Yes, but it's like implementing something halfway is difficult, or a hybrid system is difficult. We would need to, but that sounds like it's being thoughtfully thought out now.
That's a lot of this year, and plus when you double the curriculum next year, I've been talking to Martha and Diana about it. Sure that those conversations are being held, but they know where I'm at and what's going on. So with all the different concerns, including the space concerns that have come up as well. So
yeah, sure.
At the end of the day, there's still the constraint of time.
Of course.
And there's many, many outstanding elements, obviously, to the comprehensive D90 program that you know, require that active kind of interface to make a high quality education for kids. And, you know, at the risk of using that as a segue, I certainly don't want to, you know, call any other comments or questions for Kevin or AJ or Lindsay, but it really is all about, obviously, they need to be intentional, and that's what we're hoping we're going to be able to do with this upcoming strategic planning process. You know, it'll be really important that obviously technology is a consideration as part of that process, along with all of our other instructional issues, as well as the needs of the whole child, as well as so many of the priorities that this district has in ensuring that high quality instruction is provided for kids. The board has, I know in their packet, just a brief overview. This is only a two and a half page document, but it's intended to kind of introduce what the strategic planning process will look like for District 90 over the course of the upcoming year. As you look through, there are some tentative dates time. It's, I guess, kind of a timeline if you follow it from beginning to end about when these different events would happen between roughly early December through to the end of May. But while there are a lot of different cells here reflected in the intended plan, you'll see in the back page, the last page, there are really six key events that need to happen in terms of moving us from fruition to the end, or from the start to fruition, excuse me. CEC will be our facilitator for this process. We'll be introducing this process to our faculty and staff on Friday at the Institute Day and talking a little bit about our intentions there. As importantly, part of that presentation to faculty and staff, we'll talk about how strategic planning is intended to work together with the other either initiatives or activities that the district is trying to pursue at the same time to move us forward in a unified and focused manner. Right now, I think many of our faculty and staff would feel like we have lots of important work going on in isolation, whether it's pursuing refinement and alignment of the Common Core standards, whether it's the work that's being done in professional practice, the professional practice element of our evaluation program, the impending work on student growth, preparations for PARC. If we're not careful, those can look like isolated initiatives or efforts. And so it's important for all of us to remember that strategic planning is the opportunity where we can try to weave these things together in a very intentional and deliberate way. And we're excited. We know we're going to have some faculty and staff members that will be a part of this. We will have some board members that will be a part of this. We'll have some administrators. We will have some teacher aides. We will have some parents. We will have some community members. That sounds like a cast of thousands. The CEC recommended process actually is very deliberate also about how you break down those percentages of involved constituents to try and get at the heart of a large enough group that different perspectives are represented, while at the same time it's small enough that ideas aren't lost in a mass and that there's some level of efficiency. One of the great pieces of advice that, of course, the board had shared about their intentions for the strategic planning process at the board retreat this summer was to try to make sure we were looking at utilizing a process that was comprehensive enough that it really pulled out the unique details of what District 90 is and wants to become, while at the same time allowing for flexibility as this strategic plan unfolds in subsequent years. And we really think that we have this year in the CEC recommended process. We've partnered with Consortium for Educational Change before. We've had a very good experience with them. And one of the things I'll share just as a quick aside with the board that we're excited about is if this process is conducted with a level of integrity and fidelity to kind of our past mission and vision that we think it can be, it also will offer us opportunities to do some future self-assessment with CEC. Maybe we can start to probe a little bit deeper into not only our opportunities for growth, but start to, our strengths, but start to identify our opportunities for growth. Because the concept here of continuous improvement necessitates that we not just celebrate the things we're doing well, but we continue to drive down and find out where those opportunities are for improvement. We have them. And any organization certainly that doesn't acknowledge that and start to seek those things out is missing a real chance to, you know, to grow and improve over time. So, not to have rambled too much about, you know, kind of the vision and the thought behind this, but if board members have questions.
Just one following up from the board retreat.
Sure.
So, do you feel like the strategic planning process will also help us highlight what is unique about the District 90 educational experience, whether that currently exists or where we want it to go? Because it was a big focus of our discussion, and I think that this could be a good way to suss out part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if that was something you either already brought up with
The facilitator? Yes, as a matter of fact.
Okay, perfect.
Lead facilitator is a gentleman named Perry Saltwilda, which is an easier name to say than write, shockingly. Perry. He's a retired superintendent. He's served on the board for national board for the ASCD. This is somebody who understands not only strategic planning, but the importance of looking at things from a big picture perspective with an eye to detail. And I feel like that's what's called for here. Because
mm-hmm.
we are a very unique organization. I think every school district is, but there are some things that not only make us special, but I think some things that we would agree with in this room, we might want to look to moving forward. Push us to a level, or put us in a category that's different from what other school districts in this area might be able to offer for students.
It is true. I just as I'm thinking about it in terms of the. One of the real benefits of being able to, if we can come up with a good strategic plan, is this really is a period of reinvention in some respects for the district. With Common Core, with STEM, with teacher evaluation system that's new, with PARC, there's just a lot of major initiatives in a lot of different areas that are new, that are changing, that require commitment of time and resources and so forth. And it will be a challenge, I think, to prioritize and to meld things into a way so that, as you described, it's be a focused approach going forward. So hopefully that this project will yield useful results in that regard.
You know, it's interesting, Jim, when we did the last strategic plan, I thought, boy, this is a document that could live for a generation. And in, what's it been, 5 short years?
Yeah.
The world's totally changed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of history.
So
we're good. Public comments. Anybody know?
I just have. How many people are going to be on the strategic planning committee?
That's a good question. I think at the number. Please don't hold me to this. I think it's 32,
okay.
And it's broken down from. I think the recommended ratio would be something like. I think it was like 2 board members. 2 district or school administrators, 13 faculty and staff, 4 students, hopefully 2 eighth graders, possibly 2 high schoolers, obviously a requisite number of parents. I know there's some folks who participated in local strategic plans where, you know, the teams were upwards of 70. Clearly, you know, that's not really what we're going for here. But it is hard because the folks that will be at the table, I'm sure we'll feel a heavy burden that they're, you know, being asked to be representative of a much, much larger group. And that's one of the early conversations we're going to have about, you know, what that means. And, you know, are you representing someone besides yourself? Or are you coming to the table with your best ideas and impressions and, you know, goals for the district? But, it'll be important that we kind of follow the process, I think, with some fidelity so that we can work through some of the dynamics of realizing that we can't take everyone's input. Still go through the process in an efficient way.
Hence the word strategic.
Yeah,
yes.
Tactical.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of high school, before we adjourn, Pat, have we heard anything on the information sharing?
No,
that
I have
came
not.
Out?
I have not.
When was that, last fall or last spring?
It was back in the spring.
Yeah. You haven't heard anything about
it? No, remember Edwin put together that
I haven't seen any legislation that's resulted. Hey, just before we break, and it's not on tonight's agenda, our favorite topic around the Roosevelt exterior project, because there really haven't been any developments from a D90 standpoint, but I don't know if you had anything in terms of the village's calendar or anything else to share with the group? Or?
Sure. Just a couple of quick items that might be of interest to the board particularly. The village has created a draft version of a DRB process calendar. They're not yet able to confirm the dates, so I was in communication with the village administrator just this afternoon, and he said he'd get back to me as soon as possible, and as soon as that obviously is a live committed calendar, we'll have it posted on our website and in the hands of the board members as soon as possible. The traffic and safety meeting has been rescheduled to October 15th. That has been confirmed. It'll be held at Village Hall. We have received in district a another very substantial FOIA request that replicates one we received previously from the same requester. It has been a pretty significant time sink for district administration and staff, but we're working hard to meet the required, obvious legal deadlines on that. And I guess lastly, I'd like to share that Anthony and I think, along with the representatives from Terra Engineering, had a very productive pre-filing application meeting with the village administrator and his team, public works team. Mr. Houseel was there. Bill Grieve, who's the gentleman, one of the gentlemen who drafted the village's traffic study.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really productive. So we had some questions answered, and we're preparing to move on with our documents for the intended DRB pre-filing meeting, which is scheduled for Thursday, October 16th.
How much of that conversation was technical, and how much of it was substantive?
You know, I have a...
Is that a bad question?
Point of order.
Point of order. We shouldn't be talking about this.
Oh, okay.
It's not on the agenda.
Okay.
And I just don't think it's an appropriate discussion.
Okay, I was just looking for if we had any dates,
but the
Ralph.
The community would want to know if we're talking about this.
Okay.
An update is one thing, good discussion is something.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Dates are one thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess I'd ask that we be allowed to ask questions, and to that end, maybe consider putting it on the agenda, because we all have to own this, whatever's going to happen. And
Well, we can certainly do that for the next time we get together with us. Okay, anything further?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thanks.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.